Awesome date, December 1st, 2008. Awesome topic, cracking the world's shell. Wait, they didn't say that in the movie, did they?
Nope.
Anyway, it's the Atena movie.
And this is the Awesome Cast. Hey folks, it's the Awesome Cast. I'm Basil.
And I'm Douglas.
I'm Kevin.
And that's us. In case you can't tell, we're actually now using our new condenser mic, so hopefully it sounds way better than last time.
Yeah, I imagine that wouldn't be hard.
It wasn't that bad. It was better than, the settings actually did work, and that was actually much louder than it usually is.
Oh, really? Maybe we should use that place to record more often then.
The trick is that room's very echoey.
Oh.
I'm debating on possibly building a sound box. Which requires, like, a crate and, like, padding foam around to block out all the
Oh my gosh, we would be even bigger nerds than we already are.
That'd be awesome.
I'm just saying, it's a lot of people use those. It's because it's condenser mic and it's taking all the echoing we do. We're talking that way back to the microphone.
Hey, I wonder if it's taking my fan turning on the thing. Let me turn off the light and see.
Well, if you hear less background noise, it's because the fan was just turned off.
Awesome.
And speaking of the world of awesome, the world of awesome.
Awesome! First of all, in the world of awesome, I think I just need to assert, marmosets are awesome. Marmosets. Pygmy marmosets in particular.
They're very marmosetical.
Okay, now go on, what you brought to the table?
I brought life preservers for polar bears seeking on Arctic ice.
Okay,
that's awesome.
As you know, the climate crisis mounts, and Arctic icebergs are slipping away. Apparently, polar bears are suffering from things such as starvation, population declines, and drowning, as they must get further and further to find fish. Apparently, to bring this to light for people, the ADDI concepts have taken it literally and are designing a life vest for displaced polar bears.
That sounds like way too little, way too late. I mean, isn't the polar bear pretty much up a river anyway? Right now, I mean, how much can we really do to save them? And do we really need to? Doesn't extinction happen naturally as part of...
Well, it's kind of us who are making the ice caps melt, and we're kind of screwing them
over.
But
are life preservers really going to help them?
No,
Hey. Their portfolio states, a dog who lives most of its days carried around in an expensive handbag doesn't need a camouflage hoodie and a small cap over its ears. There are a few other creatures who we should give at least the same attention.
But a polar bear will eat you. A dog in a purse will lick your face.
Okay, look. And then, previously...
I'm anti-polar bear, by the way. I think those polar bears have it coming.
They also conceived of a bulletproof vest for Bengal tigers.
Oh, that's whose awesome.
Numbers had increased. There's actually a picture right there of a Bengal tiger with a bulletproof vest.
Leaping to rip your throat out.
That'd be awesome, because I'm all for the right to bear arms and the right to arm bears. Makes it all even. Or tigers, in this case.
Like.
Yeah. I'm pro a bulletproof vest for tigers. That's awesome.
Because you know how cold it gets in the safari.
I'd say it levels the playing field. It's all down to teeth and claws now, on both sides.
That's pretty good. What else?
Del Toro is going to be remaking Pinocchio.
And if anyone can do it well, I imagine it's him.
Yeah.
He's apparently teaming up with the Jim Henson Company.
Okay.
Oh my god, I love that man. Like, the more stuff Del Toro does, the more I love him.
Yes.
Like, he seems to really have picked up where Jim Henson, Untimely Death, left off.
The man loves puppetry and prosthetics and hates CGI.
And he plans on doing this as a stop-motion version.
Oh, awesome.
Well, that might be weird, but... Well, something else awesome that I want to assert out there. I don't know if they have them in other places, but I know if you go to Walmart, they have these little bottles of Coca-Cola that are perfectly spherical. if you're into art, if you're into, like, LARPing or just, like, having props for your tabletop or you're just weird like I am, you can go and you can get these and you can drink the tasty, delicious Coca-Cola that is within them. And then you have these spherical bottles everywhere and you can totally use them for, like, I'm going to use them as, like, potion mixtures. I'm going to hand you guys, like, little potions. It'll be funny colored. You guys will have to, like, do something with them. I don't know. It'll be great.
Are you going to, like, paint the caps so they don't say Coke on them?
The caps don't say Coke on them. Caps are white.
Really? Just white?
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay, I do need to buy a few of these.
They're really awesome. I mean, Coca-Cola has made something that just looks neat. They're supposed to look like Christmas ornaments for the holidays, and I guess if you're mundane, you can do that, too. I mean, I made the leap from magic potion bottle, but, you know, not everyone's going
to
do that.
I immediately made the leap to RPG bottles.
Yeah. I think we all did, deep down.
In other news of re-envisionings of movies, Will Smith and Steven Spielberg are to tackle Old Boy.
Yeah. What's Old Boy?
It's a manga slash Korean film about gangsters.
No, I've never seen it.
Guy shoots guns. It's supposed to be very good. I've actually seen it, but it's supposed to be incredibly good.
Then why have none of us seen it?
That's a good question.
Hey, Aim to the Ace was spectacular, and we didn't see it until we've seen it. That's right.
But, you know, this is a classic, you know, work of Japanese fiction that's probably going to get the I Am Legend treatment.
Yeah.
That's not awesome. Why are you bringing that up in the world of awesome, Basil? The world of awesome is specifically for awesome things, and that is not awesome.
Yes, yeah, so we saved the world of fail for the fail cast, which I'm sure someone else
We also did mention Leonardo DiCaprio in the last episode, and the Dragon Ball Z movie.
Yes.
And Rosario plus Vampire. Now, it's a world of awesome. Some things are awesomely bad.
Oh, okay. I guess I'll accept that.
And sometimes we have to bring things up, because it's also to poke at things that we know are going to be bad.
Yeah. Anyway, go on. Move next thing.
And the plus, and good, Crunchyroll and other sites are planning on to stream Shugokchara and Skitbeat. It's, those are two more recent series that have just been, adapted into anime. And then Jost, or Juiced, whatever it is getting Buzzer Beater and Kaiji. Kaiji is a really, really neat anime about gambling.
Yeah, Kaiji is neat.
And, you know, Buzzer Beater is like Ice Shield if Ice Shield was like Space Jam.
You keep trying to make me watch that. That's how you call that.
Think it's Slam Dunk, but better than Slam Dunk, set in space where it's humans versus aliens.
Well, that does sound appealing.
Like, it, you know, it's like Space Jam. It's Space Jam, the anime without Looney Tunes. If it's possible, they've done it. And it's pretty short. And they're going to start streaming it, so you have no reason not to watch it.
Moving along.
And then further on the streaming shows, also Naruto is getting streamed starting January 15th. And all the major streaming sites like YouTube and Hulu and Crunchyroll and Jost and all that sort of stuff.
So that's good. Aren't most of the fan subbing communities that currently fan sub Naruto, haven't they announced that they're going to stop subbing Naruto because it's being officially streamed and it's only going to be like a week behind Japan?
Yeah. And they've actually, I mean, Funimation's been doing that with Shikiban Hime Aka recently too. Mm. And I thought this was interesting that apparently the Japanese and Russians are getting together to make a joint Doraemon anime. As it turns out, the Prime Minister of Japan's a huge manga nerd, and apparently he constantly talks about like all his various mangas that he owns, and in fact he's talked about it to such an extent that Miyazaki is like, dude, you're a frickin' nerd. Like,
oh, that's harsh.
Like, I'm not kidding. In fact, here's the actual quote Miyazaki said. It's an embarrassment. That's something that should be done in private. We learned from the last war that the town we love or the country we love can always turn into something bad to the world. I believe we must not forget what we've learned.
That's harsh.
That's
like,
harsh.
He's warning. Well, that was warning of nationalism. Like, he doesn't want us, you know, be too proud of his country anymore, apparently, and to make, you know, anime as cultural, like, export. Apparently kind of bugs him a little bit. And he's also our leading director, you know, he's the one name that everyone knows. He's won an Oscar.
Yeah.
It's like, wow.
Not even his best movie either, but that's beside the point.
Well, he does also have a, speaking of him, he does have a new movie coming out.
Ponyo on the Cliff.
Yeah, we saw that. It was pretty good.
That was trippy.
I'm always amazed at how Miyazaki manages to make these movies that don't have an antagonist at all. And they're still, like, pretty cute little interesting movies.
Yeah. I don't know. Princess Mononoke, like,
had an antagonist. Princess Mononoke, yes, had an antagonist, but like Kiki Delivery Service didn't have one. This movie in particular, Puyo by the Cliff, didn't have a protagonist at all. Like, it had a guy that you thought was going to be the protagonist, but no, he turned out just to be another good character that's just around.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas this one was more of a,
It was way more of a kid's movie than I think a lot of his other works. Like, he makes family-friendly movies, yeah. But this one was even more, like, obviously for the kids.
Yeah, maybe he went, oh, hey, you know, I've been kind of drifting away from family-friendly into more serious. Maybe I should take a step back to just cutes and kids will like it, and
well, it's kind
adults
of,
won't hate it either.
It's kind of a step back in a lot of ways. Well, not, like, a bad step back, like a back-to-your-roots kind of step back, in that, you know, it was done completely with hand-drawn animation. It wasn't done with all the computer CGI graphics that most animation has done now.
Well, it was like the previous movie was Tales of Earthsea.
Yeah.
It was actually directed by his son.
Oh.
And his son was kind of dragged into it, and he did his best, and I believe this movie was supposed to be the elder Miyazaki's way of sort of showing him how it's done.
Oh, I see.
To show him, like, he's like, I saw your last movie, now here's what I thought.
Well, Earthsea was pretty good, but, you know, I felt like Howl's Moving Castle was better than Earthsea,
mm-hmm.
which is odd because the Earthsea books are better than the Howl's Moving Castle book.
Yeah.
So I can kind of see how the direction might have made a difference in this.
Wonder who the person who wrote the Puyo by the Cliff felt.
Yeah.
I believe it's also an adaptation.
Yeah. Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I didn't know that. But anyway, go on to the... What's this about Macross?
Oh, this originally we were going to record about Macross Frontier.
Oh!
But then poor Lee caught the mono.
Yes, the mono.
Get better, Lee.
You better. Be in stereo again soon.
Get much better. Mono is a terrible, terrible disease, and I'm halfway afraid that I gave it to you somehow.
Only because you've had it like 3 times.
I know, it's a disease you can only get once, and I've managed to have it 3 times.
I did that with chickenpox.
Like, either I'm like a silent carrier for it now, and Lee like picked up one of my drinks and drank after me or something, or if I go around Lee, I'll get it, and we just...
For a fourth time.
For a fourth time, and it'll be terrible.
Which is why we're keeping them far away from one another, just to be sure. We heart you, Lee, and want you to get better.
We do. I guess also relevant, interesting things. What do you guys think of the Mii 60s?
I'm all about the avatars.
They're neat.
I think the Mii 60s are pretty cute. I wish they had more choices to do with the clothing, but...
We're supposed to be getting the update, like, pretty soon, like, once a week or once every other week.
And you said that was going to be done with packs of clothing instead of just individual clothing, right?
Also, they've announced there's a game, I believe, it's called Ninja Blade, that's being made by From Software and published by Microsoft. They're about to release a premium theme, which is themes are designed around the new Xbox experience.
And cost more.
Which costs more, but it's also pretty supposed to include various outfits with that.
Mm.
So they might start also packaging themes with outfits.
Huh.
There's also been talks of doing things where you can actually unlock outfits by earning certain achievements in certain games.
So, ooh, that would be awesome.
There's hopefully going to be a variety of ways that you can earn things as far as...
Earn it.
Like, outfits and clothes and whatnot.
Well, anyhow, that's quite a bit of the world of awesome.
Yes, so I guess we should move on.
Move on to our topic.
And so tonight we're talking about a movie adaptation of an awesome anime series that was done by the Papas, you know, worked on by Kunihiko Ikuhara, The Adolescence of Utena. So, Utena.
Yes, Utena.
Utena was originally conceived as a TV series. It was done by a group known as Bay Papas, which was a lot of people who got together after they'd finished up working on Sailor Moon. I guess they wanted to keep going, and the director, Kunihiko Gihara, had a crazy idea of, of the ultimate shoujo, you know, retelling of fables and postmodernistic stuff, and we got Utena out of it. And it was awesome. And then they're like, oh, apparently he was watching the finale of the Utena series, the third season, on, like, television, and he came up with the idea for the movie. And was like, okay, now we're doing a movie. Which is, in some ways, could be considered a sequel. In some ways, it could be considered a retelling. But it's just all around awesome.
I think of it more as a retelling of the series rather than as a sequel to the series. because really the characters are a whole lot different from how they are in the actual anime series. Like, we just were just watching it just to, like, to get refreshed on it, because it kind of came out in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
So we were watching it to get refreshed on it.
We watched the hell out of it back when it came out. It's been a little while, I think, for all of us.
Oh, yeah.
But anyhow, and we were watching it, and we were really sitting there going, yeah, these characters are a lot different than they are in the series. Yeah. Like, Anthea is a lot more forward in the whole, like, getting up all on Atena stuff. And
less mousy, more, hey, baby.
Yeah. And, like, Shirori is even more of a manipulative bitch, if that was possible.
And almost the main villain of the thing.
Yeah.
In almost, a lot of ways. Yeah.
And Akio is also, you guys, he wasn't really the suave, cool guy. He was more kind of a...
the Machiavellian planner.
He really, in the movie, he was more of an actual, like, realistic character than in the TV show. And that's pretty impressive, considering that this movie has a random car chase. This movie is not a fan of realism. This movie is a fan of symbolism. A lot of times when you're watching the movie, you have to keep in mind that there's three different plot threads going on at any given time. There's the plot thread that they're showing you, which is actually just a symbol for a different plot thread, which is happening simultaneously as what the dialogue is doing, which is also happening simultaneously as what they're implying with putting the voice with the...
visuals.
With the visuals at that particular time. And so if you're not really in the mood to sit and, like, think critically about everything you're taking in, this you're probably going to miss a lot.
Yes, it starts off very similarly to the TV series. You know, Utena, our main character, she's this girl with pink hair and likes to dress up like a boy because she doesn't want to be, you know, put on different footing. She wants to be considered just as important as anybody else. And she's arrived to this new school.
With?
Name.
Otori Academy?
Thank you. Yes. And, you know, she meets her... in the TV series, it's her best friend, but this one, it's just her friend, Wakaba. And, you know, pretty quickly, she's introduced to the school. Although, in the movie, the school is crazy. Like, in the TV series, it's just this neat little school. And this one, you know, chalkboards just move. Like, dozens of them are, like... move about, and the entire thing almost acts like a moving M.C. Escher painting.
Yeah, there's a lot of gear work going on, and actually I would probably say if you're a fan of clockwork type styles, it's a very clockwork style setting. And, you know, they never touch on that aside from the buildings, but at the same time that really frames a lot of the visuals.
And then eventually she, you know, gets her little her rose ring, which marks the fact that you're a duelist. And there is the general thrust of the plot of both the TV series and the movie is that there is this character named Anthe. She's referred to as the Rose Bride. And the duelists have duels too. Whoever wins the duel wins Anthe. And supposedly, if you have Anthe, you have the ability to revolutionize the world.
And everyone wants to do that because it would be awesome. Although they all have different ideas of just what that means.
But only Utena is the one with... she's sort of the white knight of the series. You know, she's the closest thing there is to a pure heart. Everyone else wants to do it for selfish reasons, where she just wants to save Anthe from being stuck as the Rose Bride. Because the Rose Bride does whatever the winner wants them to.
Whatever the winner wants them to.
And in the movie, they are not too shy about showing.
No.
Just how far Anthe's willing to go. Now, in the TV series, she's very shy about it, and, you know, is very coy. In this one, while she is coy still... she's very, very forward.
Yeah, like, pull you down on the bed and try to unzip your pants forward.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, hey, Utena, why don't you strip naked so that I can draw you kind of forward?
Though I love the zipper part. There's a scene where they are together, and you do hear a zip as they're about to possibly get on. And that was a mistake. Like, someone actually added it in there.
It was a joke by the sound guys.
Yeah.
And they kept it.
And the director was like, that's awesome, we're keeping it. It's actually kind of amazing how much of the movie is the director thought this would be cool. And that's actually why something is.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was kind of like early on in the series, early in the movie, when they're actually doing the whole Sword of Dios thing. The power within Anthe is a sword. It was by a Sword of Dios, which Utena uses to do her duels with. In the middle of it, while they're about to do the sword thing, they suddenly kiss. Which you don't get in a TV series. Like, at all.
I was glad for it, personally.
And literally his reasoning was, it's the movie, why not let them kiss?
Yeah, we sat through like 39 episodes of the TV series with no kissing in a rather Yuri-theme heavy series, and So, yeah, there better be some kissing in the movie.
Yeah, the movie went straight into Yuri.
Yeah.
It's a really good example of some Yuri out there, if anybody's looking for that. And I'm sure there are.
Well, I guess it's more Sojo Ai.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
Well, I mean, in the sense that there's no actual getting it on camera, yes.
Well, they lie naked together on the dilapidated remains of the Utena car.
Yeah, but they have no nipples.
They have no nipples, but they are, in fact, holding hands, and they're naked and kissing. I think that counts as, like, full-on Yuri.
It does in my book. That's...
Oh, yeah, spoiler warnings.
They made it this far. This is probably their first podcast. It's, you know, they should, yeah, we spoil.
But, yeah, pretty much, Utena wins her first duel in a very awesome manner. And then we get deluged by a bazillion plot threads that somehow all converge back in on themselves.
Yeah.
A lot of...
They intertwine, dance around, tangent off, and tangent back in. It's...
Turn into butterflies, throw toga parties, and go on.
It's a beautifully, masterfully done piece of storytelling, and it's a wonderful example of just, like, existential symbolism for no apparent reason other than to be symbolism within symbolism within symbolism. And I really think that it would enrich everybody to go see this movie. Like, we forced my roommate Barry to watch this movie, and after the movie was done, Barry looked at me and he said, "Douglas, I owe you a kick in the vagina," and walked off. But I still feel that even going into this, knowing that he would hate this movie, I still feel that it enriched his life to have seen it, and I don't regret showing it to him at all.
There is a lot of people in this world that I have talked to that did not get the movie at all. This movie is very, very, very heavy on symbolism, you've got to think. And probably watch it a few times to really let everything sink in.
A few times.
And now, we're going to do a musical interlude, and then we're really getting into the spoilers.
What it's about.
So you probably want to come back and listen to this.
Actually, to be honest, like, there's some point of debate about what it's about. There's what the actual guy says it's about, and then what I took from it.
Then how I sort of fitted both of them together.
Yeah. Now, just tell them what the official, like, recognized thing is first, and then I'll go on off onto my crazy tangent.
Okay. This is... Furthermore, on the DVD, the director actually goes through a very lengthy and in-depth director's commentary. It's one of the best director's commentaries I've ever seen in an anime, especially. We'll actually go to he's actually watching the movie with you, and he's going to various scenes. Oh, yeah, I remember this. About the scenes. It's how we found things about, like, the zipper and whatnot. And then just kissing, because he wanted them to. And what he says is, this is sort of his allegory for growing up. It's why it's called The Adolescence of Utena, as she's going through adolescence and becoming an adult.
I thought that this movie was actually... Basil showed it to me several years ago, and I kind of watched it without being told that it was about her growing up, and the conclusion that I actually came to was that this movie was about... It was sort of about the process of getting over mourning. It seemed to me like everybody in the show had either died or had either known someone very close to them who had recently died and was at that final stage of mourning where you either have to just wallow in this pity of your loss forever and ever, or move on. I think Basil pointed out that it could be that they're talking about the death of the childhood moving on into your life as an adult. But I actually, at the time when I saw this, I think I was only 16, maybe 17 myself. And so I really didn't get the adolescence thing. I actually saw the adolescence more now that I'm an older person. You know, now that I'm in my mid-20s, I could see it a little bit better. Probably as I get older, I'll come back and see this movie and be able to understand it better then, too. But at the moment, I'm still going with my death thing.
Death.
Now, this death is a pretty predominant theme, just regardless, because you've got...
In Utena, in general, TV series and movies.
In movie, yeah. Like, I mean, it's... And you have a core of really... five people that are the main players, as were in this movie. You have Utena and Amphi, and their two princes. You know, for Utena, it's Toga. And for Anthe, it's Akio. And then there's Shiori, who sort of works in between all of them and just causes hell.
Yeah.
The trick is, as you discover as you watch the movie, you're seeing Akio doing stuff, and you're seeing Toga actually doing stuff. But you don't realize until about midway near to near the movie, they're both dead.
Yeah. Right before the car scene, they kind of reveal that, oh, by the way, Toga and Akio are both dead.
And they actually both do this in different ways. Like, Akio, you never actually see him.
He's just mentioned.
He's always mentioned. You see videos of him.
People talk about him.
Yeah.
But, you know, they never see him. Toga actually wanders around and talks to people, but only three specific people.
Yeah.
Which
is...
the person, Shiori, who is digging to find out all kinds of information. And, like, when I was saying that, like, three things are going on, in that particular scene, like, where Shiori's talking with Toga and they're doing, like, all the romantic, like,
intercouple
thing... pulling the sheets off, when she was pulling the cover sheets off of things, the first thing she uncovered was Toga. And that's when they started talking. And, you know, and she's talking to Toga, and at the same time, they're also going through Toga's sordid past, where he was molested as a child in the cabbage field, while at the same time, she's talking about how, you know, gross and awkward it makes her feel that Juri likes her. Well, and at the same time that they're doing this... they're also showing that she's pulling more and more things off. What I really got out of that little moment with Shiori is that she's going around and she's uncovering secrets, you know, literally. And the sheets are a symbol for the things that she has uncovered. They're a symbol for her little white lies. And she's using them for whatever reason to try to make her own wings for which to escape. But in making her own wings, she's kind of frightening Toga because he has that bad relationship with the moths in the cabbage field.
And that he also likes Juri. He still loves Utena. And then furthermore, all those white sheets are set up so, you know, it happens when a person dies and everything, and they're covering up the cloth. Whenever, you know, a person's moved out of their home, they cover everything white sheets to protect the dust.
Uh-huh.
And she's pulling all those off. So, yet again, there are several meanings and...
several layers upon layers of meanings of what's going on.
And they're all intentional, which is amazing. Like, it's not like... they're just throwing stuff at you and hoping it would stick. They
intentionally said, thought about this.
They knew what they were doing. And in any movie, this is possibly the best example of using, you know, metaphors and allegories and whatnot as actual parts of a movie that I've ever seen.
Yes.
You know, Akio's is much more simpler in execution, because Akio's kind of a doofus.
Yeah,
in the movie.
He's really not in the movie that much. I mean, in the TV series, he's basically the devil. But in the movie, he's just a radically different
character.
He's even a different voice actor.
Well, like, in the movie, okay, I've only seen the first season of the series and parts of the second season, so I can't, like, go in full on into, like, Akio in the TV series. But just from what you guys said, it's pretty evident that he's just a radically different character. I still think that he represents the devil even in this movie, because it seemed like the difference between Toga and Akio is that Toga deep down wanted Utena to move on. He wanted her to get over his death and move on with her life. Whereas it seemed like Akio wanted to drag Anthe down with him.
Yeah, he didn't want to let go, or he didn't want her to let go of him.
Yeah.
And in a lot of senses, it's the same in the TV series.
Yeah.
I mean, whereas Toga is much more of a gray white knight in the TV series.
Yeah.
In the movie, he's very much a white knight.
He's like a little saint in the movie, which is not how Toga was in the...
TV show, he eventually, once you understand most of his motivations, and after 30-odd episodes of exposition, you realize he's basically a good guy who occasionally makes bad decisions and is kind of a man slut, but that's not really...
And really, that's sort of the same in the movie. I mean, he made one really bad decision. He saved a person at the cost of his own life.
So really a bad decision, just not, well, bad for him personally, but...
And then, you know, there are, like, Mickey and Sanji and Juri, but they're really more side characters in the movie.
Just sad, because they're all awesome.
Power players like they were in the TV series.
Yes. Well, I do think that they added, again, having seen the movie before seeing the TV series, I pulled some really random crap about those characters. For one, I pulled that Shiori herself had died at some point, and that Juri was sitting there mourning her. And I also pulled that Miki, his sister, had died. You know, like when they're talking about, you know, in the bathtub, we can never go back to that garden. I thought that they were implying that she was also dead, and that she was much like Akio, and that she was trying to keep Miki in with her kind of thing.
That's possible.
I don't know, interpretation.
We like never.
But that's also with my full-on, this whole thing is about death interpretation. Yes. If you go with the actual interpretation that it's about growing up, those kind of things don't have to be quite as gruesome as I made them out.
Mickey might have just been talking about how he can't have an incestuous relationship with his sister.
Yes.
Like, and there's that, but also I see more as Mickey actually turned her into a car.
Yeah.
The other way around, like, because if he had actually turned into a car to leave, he had technically revolutionized himself already. He should no longer be in the movie.
Yeah.
And I actually think Shuri's more of the, you know, we see people who will, you know, those people who, even when they grow up, will never leave their adolescence.
Yes.
I think that's what Shiora is. Yeah. And she's constantly trying to either A, bring people down to her level, or B, use them to climb up in order to escape her adolescence into adulthood.
And but she's never actually trying to grow up. She's just trying to make a break for it. And that's not quite what you have to do.
You know, in a sense, you sort of have to, you know, it's in the end, it's no longer always about yourself, but it's about the world around you. And if you know, especially in the scene where she's the car, she's going, it's me, and then it dies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, whereas Utena was doing everything for Anthy, and now Anthy's doing everything for Utena, they sort of spread their wings towards a higher ideal, which was somebody else.
We mentioned there's a massive car chase scene in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. This is actually the scene that turned most people off. When I was back in high school, and I was trying to show all my high school friends this movie, a lot of them were able to sit with it throughout most of the movie. Like, they had embraced my idea that this was about symbolism, and they would pause it periodically and then turn to me and go, okay, now what? And we would just, like, talk about what was going on, and we'd fast forward. But then we got to the moment where Utena turns into the giant pink car.
Barbie pink car.
And several of them walked out.
Oh, it's awesome.
And, you know, while there are meanings and allusions and stuff that you can draw from it, like, the directors immediately said, like, I want to do something different. I want to do something that nobody expected. And I've been doing sword fights for the past 39 episodes in the first 2/3 of this movie. I thought, would it be great if we did a car chase?
An epic car chase.
I mean, you really can draw, like, they do put in a lot of symbolism for the car. Like, there really is a lot of symbols there. But it did, in fact, boil down to that's what the director wanted.
Yeah, like the key in the car that's shaped like the rose petal. That's the rose petal is
symbolic. Well, think about it. Anthy had the key to Utena.
Yes, and we all know what a rose petal represents.
Ooh.
Indeed.
And other things, like, they're repeating the line, if a car doesn't have a key, it'll rust, and you're talking about just idling in your current position and not moving on. And they're also, you can also make the argument that a car is one of the symbols of adulthood. You know, kids can't drive, adults can drive.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's all kind of splitting hairs and after the fact.
A car can take you places.
Yes.
Yeah, but they wanted a cool car chase.
They wanted a cool car chase.
And you got, when I was waiting to get a lot of really good, you know, mecha designers and guys who specialized in car chases type stuff and employ them just for the scene in the movie.
It's a really good car scene. It's unfortunately just a really out of place car scene.
Well, yeah, it is a lot of place. I don't think, in the sense of, it's not what you're expecting from Utena in any way, shape, or form. I think in the general movie as a whole, it did kind of fit.
It did. But this is a pretty weird movie.
Yes.
That's why we like it.
I also... It's also one of those moments, like, when Utena first turns into a car, like, and the car gets revealed, and Anthy is like, ah, a car! It's either a moment where you really, really love the series, or you really stop loving
it. Yeah, it is the breaking point.
It's the deal breaker.
But if it doesn't break for you, you're in for a treat, because it's really well done, especially with the music.
Yes.
With J.A. Caesar?
Caesar? Maybe. J.A. Caesar. I don't know.
Personally, I think one of the best moments in creepy anime is when, like, the Utena car has been, like, all distraught up, and, like, it's getting, like, destroyed and shattered, and Anthy is clinging to, like, the remains of it between, like, the two grinders of the castle, and Akio calmly walks up to her.
Rapidly moving street.
Yes. Well, that was just pointing out, again, more harping on the fact that this guy is dead.
Yeah, he's
clearly
a ghost,
the devil.
Or a devil, or he's not,
and he's,
right.
And it's a symbol of stasis.
Yeah.
So, like, he's staying in place. No matter how fast life goes on, he's stuck where he is and does not want to move.
And it's a really, I personally thought that was a really powerful little scene there.
It was good.
Yeah, always, that struck me the first time I saw it.
And then when, you know, you actually see, like, everything break apart, you know, it's going, bah, 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 you know, and then they burst forth in a spray of
rose petals.
Rose petals.
You know, and triumphant, you know, lesbian glee.
Yes.
But yeah, it definitely enriched my life to see it, despite the fact that Barry now owes me a kick in the vagina. I think it enriched his life to see it. I think it enriches everybody's life to see it. I think that all of you listeners should go watch this movie, and you should drag as many friends as you can drag to see this movie. Even if you hate it, even if your friends hate it, you will get something out of having seen this movie. Watch
the movie.
That's how me and Kevin first saw it. Yeah. It was Eddie Boy, because we had found a fan sub of it.
Yes.
You know, this was before the digital days where we actually had to buy it off bootleggers.
Yes.
Or actually trade for it.
Yeah, we totally got people to play it in a viewing room and a big screen.
It was awesome.
There were cheers when the girls kissed, but hey, it was...
Now, I do want to talk more about the movie's score, because I think it was really, really good.
Yes.
Okay.
Like, they even said they intentionally built it more as a musical than anything else. And the guy who does most of the music is Jay Caesar. He does a lot of movie scores for, like, actual movies and stuff, and he did a very interesting style to both the TV movie and TV series, especially during, like, the duels.
Oh, yes, the duel songs, which are, like... Okay, they're somewhere in between, like, rock and...
Choral.
Yes. Like,
you know, then there's, you know, Absolute Destiny Apocalypse, the song.
Which is the, that's just the song. It's...
you know, it's really good stuff, and, you know, the opening and ending themes were done by Masami Okui, which is...
One of the members of Jam Project, and...
One of the best, like, you know, J-pop singers, especially during that time, like... Like, the only person that could, you know, stand up to her, if not better, was Megumi Hayashibara.
And they often did duets together.
Yeah, they were, like, really good friends. They host a radio show together nowadays. And just, you know, the music for Tenet was very, just, you know, top-notch. Okay. The movie really, really showed it.
This is actually one of the few animes, well, Utena in general, not just the movie, but one of the few animes where I own soundtracks for it, and I listen to something besides just the vocal songs.
It's got a lot of really good just musical motifs.
Yes, and the motifs are in the music. They repeat themselves.
Yeah, a lot of times there's a lot of music in anime that's just, you know...
Background.
Just background. It's meant to be background piece, and then you dump it. You don't listen to it again because it's so out of place that it only works as background music. So if you Utena, you can actually listen to as music, and yes. It works.
You can listen to the movie soundtrack and close your eyes, and it's a lot like watching the movie. Like, the music is that in tune with what's going on.
And let me tell you, get on the interstate, you put on the tracks that were during the car driving tracks, and it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. This road is our destiny. How many awesomes out of awesomes can we give the adolescents of Utena?
Wow. There's like.
Is it possible?
There's like, not enough awesomes.
I'm going to give it sweet 16 awesomes out of awesome.
I say there's not enough awesomes. This is my favorite movie of all time.
It possibly might be my favorite movie too, actually. It's up there. It's definitely my favorite animated movie of all time. I really can't think of a live-action movie I like more, too.
Flat-out favorite movie ever, and the Utena car is my favorite mecha ever. And from me, that means a lot.
It's true. And thankfully, you can actually still buy this movie, especially on various online retailers. Most of them do have one version of the movie or the other. It'll actually net you maybe about $16, maybe $20 with shipping, which is a really good deal. Now, we did have it mentioned much in the way of, you can watch this movie without watching the TV series. And you can still draw a lot from it.
Like I did.
Though I do feel that once you watch that whole all the TV series, you'll get even more. Because what you don't notice, unless you've actually seen the rest of the TV series, a lot of the visual motifs, which you think are really neat and interesting and original, actually were already done before, but done in the TV series. Like in that long hallway where you're seeing, you know, Utena constantly walk through the hallways and see all these automotive signs, road signs pointing her in the right direction to go.
Yeah.
That's third season. Like, the scene where you have the elevator moving downwards.
Yeah.
It's from the second season.
Goes down and comes out at the top of the school.
Yeah.
Again, I interpreted that as a symbol.
Yeah. Well, it is.
It's just one of those things where they were so good at their own symbolism, it works both in the TV series and in the movie. It's just, again, it works on so many levels, it's why it's really great.
And
I don't know, you one time tried to tell me, like, the plot of the TV series... as it actually isn't. I personally thought that the plot of the TV series sounded like way too convoluted. Like there's all this like secret stuff going on, And really, the plot of The Adolescence of Utena is pretty... Once you get past, like, the weird symbolism, the weird storytelling mechanisms, there's a lot to it, but it's pretty straightforward. It doesn't get really bogged down in its own things. Like, people are what they eventually turn out to be.
I also think it was me failing to explain it.
Oh, that could be it.
Like, I thought it was more my failing to be able to adequately convey what it was than the shortcomings of the series itself.
Because it's awesome. The series is awesome. You should...
The TV series is also really good, and we'll... I really do. I want to cover those later, but like, from a season to season point.
Okay. You have to like,
which means we'll have to watch them again. Oh no!
Oh damn!
Oh, this God. Is like, you know, only my. Well, I'm not gonna go so far as say it's my favorite anime series, but it's up there.
So when do we get to talk about how awesome Tales of Vesperia is?
As soon as I can play it. Now you can probably get Lee to do it
get
once he's
on
off
it.
The mono. He'll probably be done before.
Probably
after
he's off the mono, he's had a chance to play in most of it.
Yeah, that's all he's doing, as far as I can tell. He's playing Vesperia.
And I'm going to probably beat it tomorrow.
You better.
It'll probably be you and Lee and Basil, because I probably won't get it done by then.
But we obviously stopped talking about Utena now, so Yes. We hope that you've had a great Thanksgiving, because for us it's actually tomorrow, but for you it's already been well past.
And I hope none of you people came to my store on the day after Thanksgiving and gave me any trouble, because I know there will be plenty of people who are.
That's right. And with that, we're out. Awesomecast, your podcast for everything awesome. If you liked us and want to hear more about us, read more about us, listen to more about us, or leave us comments, go to our website, osmcast.com. Leave us a comment in the comment section. Or you can send us an email at osmcast@gmail.com. Or check us out on the Awesome Line. Give us a call. It's area code 206-202-0071. Thank you, and...
get out of my house.
Okay.
Well, that's...